I'm Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. I'm very happy to have today my guests on Research Matters, Michael Rosner and Ray Farbury. Mike Rosner is Head of the Department of Intelligent Computer Systems here at the University. He holds a Master's degree in Psychology and Philosophy from the University of Oxford, Postgraduate Diploma in Computer Science from the University of Cambridge, and a Certificate in Online Education from the University of London. He's worked extensively in the areas of AI, artificial intelligence, and computational linguistics for some 25 years. Prior to arriving in Malta in 1995, he worked at the universities of Essex and Geneva and became deputy director of the Istituto delle Molle per gli studi sull'intelligenza artificiale di Lugano. His current areas of interest include natural language generation, multilingual and multimodal applications, computational aspects of Semitic languages, and e-learning. He was the coordinator and grant holder of a national research project for the development of corpus and computational lexicon for the Maltese language, and remains a participant in several EU research projects in the area of human language technology, e-learning, and the semantic web. He's currently engaged in a university project dealing with the morphological analysis of written Maltese. Ray Farbury obtained his PhD in general linguistics from the University of Düsseldorf, Germany in 1992, where he also worked as research assistant, as a research fellow on projects dealing with linguistics. He has been senior lecturer in linguistics at the Institute of Linguistics here at the university since 1996, his main areas of specialization being language theory, language typology, and morphosyntax, in particular the morphosyntax of Maltese. He's the author of a book on grammatical agreement in Maltese, as well as several papers dealing with various grammatical aspects of Maltese, including definiteness marking, work order, and the tense aspect system, inflection, and compounding, among others. He is a member of the National Council of the Maltese Language, head of a committee within the council that focuses on Maltese and IT, and a member of the board of the International Association of Maltese Linguistics. Together with Michael Rosner, our other guest today, from the Department of Artificial Intelligence and Computer Science, and Albert Gatz from the Institute of Linguistics, is involved in a project that aims to develop an electronic lexicon, corpus, and morphological analyzer of Maltese. Welcome to you both. From your CVs, obviously, it's clear that your research interests revolve around computers and language. Perhaps you could both give your different takes, perhaps, on the importance of these two areas, the binding of these two areas. I know perhaps Mike would like to start off.
This is a bit like beginning of an undergraduate lecture, but I always begin with the theme of computers and language and point out that the two fields are related to each other and have been related to each other for a long time for a large number of different application areas. It so happens that one of the very first application areas that was proposed when computers were invented in about the 1950s was machine translation. Because the task apparently seemed to be very simple. It seemed to require memory. It seemed to require the representation of words in two different languages, and it seemed to require some kind of association between the two languages. And the way in which people began to look at that problem was simply as a problem of simple computation. And it should be simple to do. You simply computerize the dictionary and a bilingual dictionary, and hopefully you feed in a sentence at one end and out comes the sentence in the other language from the other end. And of course, as most things in this field turn out to be, it is not as simple as that. And what is interesting is that it is still regarded, the problem of machine translation is still regarded as a paradigm problem in the relationship between computers and language, in that in order to achieve machine translation, you need to solve a large number of different sub-problems in working out the correspondence between the two languages. And I believe that although progress has been made in that area, it is still seen as something which requires all the different subparts of the relationship between language and computers in order to be solved. So we've achieved quite a lot, but we're by no means reached the stage where we can say we have a translating machine which works for all texts and all qualities of output. So I think I'll stop at that point and let Ray.
Yes, Ray comes obviously at it perhaps from a slightly different angle mm-hmm. and emphasis.
Yes, well, first of all, I think as Mike said, and it should be clear that language and computers are two things that somehow go together. I mean, Mike mentioned translation, machine translation. I guess another obvious area of interest is interaction, so machine-human interaction. You know, to what extent can you use natural language to actually communicate with a machine and to get machines to communicate with each other using language? That's also a very interesting and very, very, very good challenge. And it involves, obviously, knowledge about language. So I think that since the 50s, you know, a lot of work in linguistics has been influenced by what was going on in computational areas as well. In fact, one of the most famous, perhaps, modern linguists, Noam Chomsky, is also quite well known in computational studies because of his work on so-called artificial languages. So, in a way, the linguist is interested in language, mostly in what we call natural language, that is the language that humans use usually to communicate with each other, but also in so-called artificial languages, so computer languages and so on, because there are interesting similarities between the two, and one would like to find out exactly in what way they are similar, in what way they are different, and how we can use artificial languages, computer languages, in order to and programs in order to simulate natural language as well. And so there's, I think, the link is quite obvious between the two areas. And obviously language is a very complex, natural language is a very complex phenomenon, involves lots of different factors. We're going from sounds, from phonology, so the use of sounds, meaning, structures of words, structures of sentences. Meaning is a very, very, very interesting and important area, but also the language use, so what we call pragmatics, in other words, how do I communicate if I say it's very cold in here, do I mean, exactly that, or do I mean can you please close the window? So there are many things going on in language which we take for granted, but once you actually start thinking about them and trying to create models on computers that actually do those sorts of things, you find out how complicated things are. Mm-hmm. And so, this is basically where language research is going to. Nowadays, a lot of linguistics involves a computational part in the sense that we also, for example, try to use computational models to test our theories of language.
It is a lovely idea, this, that the computer people should be interested and needing the input of the more humanities side, and this you need them and they need you kind of thing. So it's very much a sort of globalization of the research. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of use each other to move on.
Could I just add one thing about the relationship between computers and language, and that is that there are sort of two. If you look at all the work that's done, all the work that's currently being done in that sphere, in between those two spheres, you tend to find that there are two very broad approaches. One of them, one might call a scientific approach, in which the aim is to try and find explanations for how people do things. So, I mean, in linguistics, linguists are interested in trying to explain how language really works for human beings. That's what I call the scientific side, scientific approach. There's also the engineering approach, in which the aim is not, the aim of explanation is secondary, but the primary aim is to create machinery which can interact more naturally with people. Whether or not it does it like people do is sort of secondary. And this has given rise to, if you like, two different approaches that we see in the way people do different tasks. So one group of people might be interested in, for example, I'm going to go back to my example of machine translation. Some people might be interested only in how good the quality is and how fast it does it, but they couldn't care less about whether it tells them anything about how humans do it. There are those, on the other hand, who are interested in how humans carry out translation, and they will use the computer to build models which can be used for explanatory purposes. And I think that this science versus engineering, of course, they have to come together in the end, but at our present stage of understanding of the problems, there are sort of two different overall aims that people tend to work in. And you tend to find people in engineering departments working on the engineering side, and in the more scientific departments, such as in linguistics, working on the more explanatory side.
And very often they don't interact.
They often don't interact. They don't interact as much as one would hope.
So, yeah, exactly. So we feel, for example, we've been working together for quite a while now, that we learn a lot from each other, because we come, you know, from all different points of view, different ideas, and obviously we're both interested eventually in having something that is robust, that's a good product. And I think, you know, coming from different areas, but both related to each other somehow, we do contribute a lot and understand each other a lot, because very often you get different people not really understanding the other's problems because of these different approaches that Mike was talking about.
But if, the way you've described it, perhaps the engineers don't feel the need. If they are looking at things from a different angle, perhaps they don't feel the need to interact, really. I mean, do you think it's necessary that they should, or can they do it in isolation?
It's one of these things that goes in cycles. And I think that what happens is that you can look at a problem from a purely engineering point of view, and then you suddenly discover you need some way of describing this problem which is more at a higher level. And so you have to go and ask the linguists how they see this problem in order to be able to describe it at a level that you can get your hands onto it. Mm. I'll just give you a small example of that. You can view a sentence as either a collection of tokens, as a sequence of tokens, and each token is different to the other, and all you're interested in is the sequence and nothing else. Or you can view a sentence as a sequence of parts of speech. Okay, now, if you view it as a sequence of parts of speech, you're already importing into your description a level of linguistic description which is required and actually helps you to see the structure of what's there. If you treat it as a sequence of words, then if you change one of the words, you've changed the whole sentence. But you might, you know, you need that higher level of description in order to get your hands on the problem. And that's where this interaction comes to be important.
I guess it depends on the level of sophistication of, yes, you know, the product you want to achieve. I think it's very useful for, you know, people. I mean, linguists have been looking at language for, you know, thousands of years now. And so we know about all the problems, the ins and outs of languages. And we don't have solutions to most of the problems, but we know. We don't even know where language came from or how it evolved or anything of the sort. But, I mean, there are lots of questions. We know what the questions are. We know what the problems are. And I guess in a certain way, if you approach language from a non-linguistic point of view, you tend to be a bit naive about things. You wouldn't know about, you know, for example, the case with grammatical categories might be sort of, people might think, oh, obviously there's a verb, there's a noun, there's an adjective. But then if you look at many different languages, you'll find out that things are not as simple as that. And of course, what you want is a machine that can not just use English or just Maltese, but any language really. And if you're into the translation in particular, you need to go from one language to the other. So yes, I think you need, you know, working together is the best solution, I think.
In the projects you've been working on, you've been working together. What are these projects?
Yeah, well, specifically there are three areas which you mentioned before. So the lexicon, the electronic lexicon, and the electronic corpus, and the morphological analyzer. I'll just say a few words about some of them. Perhaps Mike can add a bit more later on. So the electronic lexicon is basically a bit like what you can think of as a dictionary, right? But in electronic form. So the idea would be, I'm talking about Maltese here, by the way, of course. So an electronic lexicon for Maltese. These things exist for languages like English, for example, in particular, but German and many other languages as well. We are still a bit, far behind in Maltese, unfortunately, for many reasons, which we can talk about perhaps later on. So we need a kind of dictionary, an online dictionary. Now, there are many possible kinds of dictionaries you can get online. And the one we're interested in is one, basically, which gives you grammatical information. So what you do is you can look up a word, okay, in any form, and you get information about that word, what category belongs to, whether it's masculine, feminine, and so on, and what other words it's related to. And this is something we want to build up. So the first stage would have minimal information. Eventually, we want to add more and more information to it. So that's one thing. And the important, by the way, is that it should be accessible to the public. Okay. And then the corpus and the lexicon are meant to work together. Now, corpus is a collection of language data, basically. And there are two kinds of corpora. There's a spoken and a written corpus. We are working mainly on a written corpus, although there is a project within the Institute, and they are working on a spoken corpus as well. So the idea there would be to have a kind of a portrait of what the language is like at the moment by having representative texts from different areas. Journalism, say, government publications, books, literature, and so on and so forth. So you can actually go and find out about the use of a particular word in a particular context and so on. And the morphological analyzer is something perhaps a bit more technical. It is a machine, if you like, that can actually take a word and split it up into its component parts and tell you, well, this part gives you the first person masculine, the first person, third person feminine, etc., etc., you know, and tell you how the word is actually made up of bits and pieces.
Who would that be aimed at?
Okay. Well, I think it's aimed at... if you like, different kinds of user. Let me go back to the dictionary for a moment. I mean, we think of a dictionary as being something, a thick volume where you look up words and you find whatever you find. You find the word and then you find certain kinds of information. So the first point I want to make is that a dictionary is more than just a word list. It's a word list plus information. Now, when we talk about paper dictionaries, associate this volume with certain patterns of usage. So normally it's used by humans. It's used by humans probably looking for certain kinds of information. They want to see, if you look at a dictionary entry, you will find the grammatical category. You will also find information about possibly a definition saying something about what it means. And you will also find usage information saying, giving examples of its use.
Pronunciation
and other such information will be present. Now, that is a paper dictionary. Now, what we're interested in is having this information in a form, not necessarily all of it, but as Ray pointed out, we're initially interested in grammatical category, which can be used, for example, by a machine. So a machine comes across a word, and it wants to know what parts of speech this word has got. And it's not going to be one, it's typically more than one. So this is going to be looked up somewhere. And this raises problems about how you organize a system which can be interrogated in this way. The information has got to be represented in a concrete fashion. It's got to be able to accept different kinds of requests for information. It's got to be able to deliver that information in a form which is kind of understood. So a lot of our project has been concerned with defining the sort of standards you need in order to create machine-readable dictionary entries and to, as it were, deliver those entries to people who want to know about them, or to not just human users, but also to users machines. Which are machines. I mean, a machine which is trying to analyze a sentence will want to know about a certain word. So that's one aspect of the problem. Another aspect of the problem is, where do these words come from? It's one thing to have the definitions of the standards you're going to use, but this is like an empty shell. So, where are we going to get the content from? And a lot of our work has been concerned with trying to find ways of filling the content in a way which is correct and which is comprehensive and which covers a large amount of the language. And one of the things, for example, we've done is in this project is we've created a kind of an interface which enables enables us to progressively transform a word list into lexicon entries where people can edit the entries online and basically maintain the context of the dictionary and update it in a way which is consistent and is also informed because the users here would be linguists. So, I mean, that's as far as the dictionary is concerned. Maybe I should stop and let somebody else say something.
I was going to ask about in the old days when they first started doing the dictionaries, they used to get people from all over the country to send in their meanings of words on little pieces of paper, and little pieces of paper would have been put into envelopes or whatever, files or whatever. What is your methodology for doing today?
As Mike said, you know, it will be accessible, so people can actually
like
add words.
Like a Wikipedia.
That is, I mean, let's put it this way. One of the aims of the corpus, because we talk about a dictionary and we talk about a corpus, is to have a collection of texts, of representative texts about the language, which can be consulted, so that you can then look at the use of these words in context automatically, find out what kind of how they're used, and make use of this data, which won't replace people sending in their cards, but it will provide a kind of first step at that.
So we see the lexicon and the corpus interacting, in a sense that the new material in the corpus can produce new words, bring about new words, which then go into the list in the lexicon. And the lexicon can be used to analyze the words in the corpus because it's got the grammatical information. So you get the two things working together.
So at the end of the day, to use EU Project Speak, the deliverable is going to be a software that has this lexicon on it and this corpus on it. I mean, is that the final aim? I mean,
a site, right, a server, whatever, where you can actually go. Where the material is, the data is, where there are a number of tools which you can use, computational tools, in order to manipulate the data, and which you can obviously have a look at, use, consult, and possibly also participate in actually, you know, extending and changing and editing. Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a democratic process.
That's the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's wrong to call it a software. It's very much more like a kind of portal in which there are all kinds of things going on connected with this. I mean, underneath it all, there's this data. But this data can be, you know, used by different people in different ways or by programs in different ways. And the idea is to provide a set of services which can make use of this data or maintain this data or get people to give their opinions about this data. And the idea is that these are all collected together within this well, we call it the Maltese Language Resource Survey. Was the name of the project, in fact.
And is this going to be a sort of finite project, or can you see it moving off into different directions?
Well, there are lots of possible uses and applications. I mean, finite definitely not in the sense that this is an ongoing thing. I mean, you know, language changes, language develops and so on. So really you want to go on including information and possibly also deleting information. So there might, or just, you know, labeling certain words as obsolete or old fashioned, etc. And words change meanings and so on and so forth. So really, ideally there should be, say, a person or a group that actually maintains this indefinitely, really. You know, okay? But that, of course, involves certain things you don't need to put money, resources, and so on, which are big problems we don't, you know, which is something different from the actual content itself. But apart from that, applications, Mike, I guess you can.
Well, I mean, their applications are the obvious ones, starting from things like spelling correction. We still don't have a decent spelling corrector for Maltese. And then one can go and start to climb the ladder of applications. There are things concerned with words, so spelling correction and suggesting, you know, alternative words, thesauri and so on. Grammatical correction as well, which is one step above that. And then one gets into other areas of sort of language engineering, things like analyzing texts, being able to discover what this text is about by, for example, highlighting, I don't know, the proper nouns which are being spoken about, and thus getting a profile of the content of that of the text. And we are currently working on this kind of application in which you take a raw text, which is just words, and then you progressively analyze it for syntactic and semantic structure. So we're working on these things at the moment.
Well, in the last minute and a half that we've got together, I know that you have the master's program, which you've been working on for some time, and that there are other courses, but could you just briefly mention the courses that involve your work?
Well, the Institute, in collaboration with Mike's department, we are planning an undergraduate course in human language technology. This is still in the making, but the ideas are there, and you know, we're trying to get this. That will be interesting, hopefully, for students to get into this area. And we need students, we need academics, we need people who are trained in this area, because that's something we lack here in Malta, unfortunately. So we need to train people for that sort of thing. And then there's Mike's.
Yeah, I mean, just to underline that, I think that there are. It is clear that in, especially when you look at the role of the internet and the role of sort of social media, which are now favorite, and things like Facebook and these kind of media, these are all language based. People mostly interacting with language. So there's a whole area of linguistics which is concerned with these kinds of media, and that's something which is something we'd like to kind of promote in the study of linguistics. It becomes more relevant to what's going on in real society. Plus, I've been running a master's course in collaboration with other universities under a program called Erasmus Mundus, and this is now in its third year of operation. It deals with human language, science and technology, and it deals with the students we're getting are coming from all over the world. So we're very pleased with that.
Thank you both very, very much, Michael Rosner and Ray Fabry, for coming on Research Matters to talk about your research. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I do hope that you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.